Oh, okay.
That's it. We are live with Chris Fried.
Hey, everyone.
We're in our basement. And I want to explain something, Chris. We're in my basement. We have a couple of comfortable chairs. Mm-hmm. We're holding on to microphones. This is the way people do it. I don't know if you've ever seen this.
And this is podcasting the real world. Internet, right? This isn't, we're done. You didn't just lure me here in a, we're, I'm down in your basement. I'm assuming this other people are seeing this.
Yeah. Well, oh, okay. I mean, I hope.
How to Be Tom Shalhoub, a podcast starring me, Tom Shalhoub. Each week, I explore a topic or speak with someone I find interesting, someone I think you could learn from. By listening, you might gain some insight into what it's like to be Tom Shalhoub. Now, why would anybody want to do that? Well, look, you have to model yourself after someone, right? Might as well be me. I mean, who are you going to be, Albert Einstein? Much easier to start with someone simple, like me, Tom Shalhoub.
This is what I've done. I'm doing what I see other podcasters doing.
Oh, like, yeah.
Whenever I go on and look at podcasts, it's always a bunch of comedians horsing around.
Yeah.
They're sitting in chairs. They, you know what is very big? It's
usually
holding
slouching.
Microphones. Yeah, slouching and holding the microphones in their hands.
Yeah.
Even though they have big, this is something that's very big in podcasting now, is that they have expensive, like $700 studio mics.
Yeah.
That are supposed to be hooked up to, you know, contraptions, but they're holding them in their hands.
Yeah.
That's the thing they do. So
it's, I think it's cool to look like professional, but like you don't care that much with it, you know? So you have the equipment, but not the care.
Right.
So that's cool. That's cool.
You can hear my dog barking there. So we're in the basement. We've got the lighting. I have a green screen behind us, but I'm not using it because I don't want to go too far. I don't want to get all crazy like we're in a studio. The other thing I have is that I have this Mevo camera, which is it's a video camera for streaming. And I've never done this before where you put it on automatic, where it does in-camera switching. Mm-hmm. So I have one camera, but it creates the illusion that there's three cameras because like if you start talking or if you were to do some type of there you go,
like, and it follows
it
you.
Follows this. yeah so I figured, you know, if I get the camera and it's got the technology in it, you might as well use it, right?
Again, very professional looking, but with an element of half-assery.
Exactly.
That's what's cool.
Yeah, because it's the camera's supposed to be following you, but it's really just shaking a little bit. Like, because we're not going anywhere, so there's no need to follow us. Okay, so Chris Fried, let's get this out of the way first. Your name is spelled Fried. Have we
that
ever determined why that your name is weird like that?
Well, it's German, so you pronounce the second vowel. So that's the, I don't know why, but that's the reasoning. So you pronounce the E because it's IED.
Oh, okay.
But yes, it's the same spelling as Fried. I don't know what nationality Fried is, but I've been told that Fried can be either German or Jewish. I'm German.
Yeah.
And they're historically opposites. So I don't know why it's so close to begin with, but, but no, I don't really know my real history. My dad doesn't know his family much, and I refuse to do the blood work stuff. So
now why do you
I'm not like a conspiracy, but I don't know anything about it. I just, like, I'm against people caring about that.
I see,
because it just seems like, you know, we want to get past this whole, like, you know, we everyone is supposed to be equal. There's no differences between where you come from or anything.
Yeah.
But then everyone goes crazy to find out the history of exactly where they.
Yeah.
But it's like, it doesn't matter. So let's just forget about it. Let's all stop caring where we came from.
I see. That's interesting. I am I don't want to give my blood because I would be curious to build a family tree, like the ancestry kind of thing. But I don't want to send my DNA in an envelope to a company. Yeah,
it seems weird.
Yeah, because it's going to get. I mean, I don't know who Ancestry is owned by, but it's probably like, you know, if it's not Google, it's probably Jeff Bezos.
Yeah,
and
they're doing something with it.
They're doing something with it.
Yeah,
I don't
cloning.
Like that.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
So what's this? I'm not a conspiracy. Of course, you're a conspiracy.
Well, I'm open to the theory. Like, I enjoy the theories. I just don't particularly know what it would be. So I don't really care, but
yeah,
I just don't like the feel of it. There's something weird about sending a piece of you.
Yeah.
I didn't even want like fingerprints and stuff. Like, I don't want my fingerprints on record. And then I will.
Mine are.
Well, me too.
Yeah. My retina. My retina is on.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I don't think my retina is. Like, I don't know.
Because I did TSA pre. Did you do TSA pre?
No.
Yeah, they got your retina.
Retina. No, what I did was I pre-drank before driving and then had to give my fingerprints. Although it is expunged. So, but I do think my prints are still somewhere. Yeah, there's,
oh, they keep them. They keep everything. Yeah. In fact, that's why they, you know that if you send your DNA in somewhere, you know, one time there was a guy, there was a murder because I watched Forensics Files.
Mm-hmm. Forensics Files.
It was, there was a guy, there was a murder in a small town. And then the police were like,
those are the best ones. The small town murders. Yeah.
It was like, an, you know, like in the, you know, the, not the Galapagos Islands, but some islands or whatever, the British Isles. And the police were like, oh, we need the DNA of everyone in this town.
Yeah, it's like, no, you don't. I mean, you do,
they didn't have the authority to do that. You can't just collect DNA, right? But they said, we want the DNA of everyone. Please come and give your DNA. And everybody did, except one guy was like, he got on a plane, right? So they were like, oh, it's definitely him.
Yeah.
And
that's a great way to, it's like a checkpoint.
Yeah.
But like, you know, that makes sense.
Look at this. We've got comments here. This is the other thing about, so I'm using StreamYard software, right?
Yes.
And it's got the self, you know, the self controlled camera. And also with the StreamYard, you can see the comments while people are watching it live. So let's see what, let's go to the comments. Like it's almost like a live radio show.
Let's take a question or a comment.
Bring back Red Eye. Oh, that'd be great, Joseph Ashcroft. Yeah.
I agree. I do agree. I never got to do Red Eye.
You didn't?
It ended right when I was sort of coming around.
That's amazing. But then you did, so the radio show that I was doing after Red Eye was
did a lot
canceled.
Of that.
You did that a lot.
Yeah.
Now, Red Eye was... for people who don't know, this is interesting. Red Eye was canceled because
the host. No,
there was no the it was canceled because Fox News used to be everyone would pre-tape, right? O'Reilly taped at like 4:30.
Yeah,
Megyn Kelly taped at like 5:30. Everybody was out of the building by 7 o'clock.
That's weird. For some, I thought O'Reilly was live for some reason. I don't know.
Well, you thought that now because everything's live now.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it's.
But back in
those
days,
we'll do it live.
Yeah. I mean, that was the famous O'Reilly, right? But back in the day, primetime. I mean, you have these hosts. They're marquee hosts. They don't want to. They don't want to be up at 11 o'clock. They want to go home. They have families and everything like that. Mm-hmm. O'Reilly wanted to be home. Okay. Everybody wants to be home, but
yes,
the. The other cable networks were going live. And so once they decided that we've got to be a live network, they changed the whole programming and 8 o'clock had to be live.
Okay.
9 o'clock had to be live. 10 o'clock, it's got to be live. So we were benefiting because when Red Eye was created, we benefited from the fact that we were able to use leftover crew people. So the director and the camera people from O'Reilly just finished up O'Reilly, which, you know, because they work 8-hour shifts, but the show's done in a couple of hours and the guys are still there. So their crew. So it essentially was a low budget show and it was, we were working on fumes of the rest of the shows. So
how cool would it be if you just got a motley crew of weirdos to come in at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
And
do it live.
Do it live.
That would be so fun.
That would be real fun, because then you guys could just like drink, like no one will catch you in the back. And
I mean, it would be
everyone
great.
Could be just weirdos.
It'd be hard to get guests, but not so hard to get comedians.
That's true. And that's, you know,
they're up late, right?
Yeah.
But that's essentially what happened to Red Eye. And then when Fox News was created, they were like, oh, what? We can just do shows like Red Eye that are just kind of running on fumes. Mm-hmm. We can just put those onto the Fox Nation. And then we got Greg's got the panel show, and now Greg's every night. So, you know, this was why it was hard to get me back in there in the Red Eye position. let's see, Jamie LaBella.
There's still hope, Jamie though. I do believe there's hope for to come back. So.
Yes, I know, and I'm ready to go. I'm rearing to go. When can we reform our schools? This is like, what do you think? This is like Fox News or something?
When can we reform?
You handle that topic?
Was that Jamie, or is that a different
person?
No,
that was Mark.
I thought you said Jamie.
Mark Chipman. When can we reform our schools, and how? Mark, you know what? Maybe we'll get to that. Maybe Chris has an idea.
Yeah, I'll think of.
But we're not terribly.
Let me Google some facts quick that I don't know at all for the last 20 years of my life.
Yeah. Well, do you think, like, I'm anti-school, and I think
that just in general,
I think that they should. Obviously, I'm for kind of reforming the schools, but I think the only way they can do that is to have them die. Like, public schools are so bad now.
Oh yeah. See, that's the problem, is that reform kind of is hard, because you want to just be like, listen, we need to throw out everyone who's ever wanted to be a teacher that I know. Everyone that I know that has been a teacher, I don't think should be a teacher. So then there's that. It's like, listen, I know that you seem passionate, but you also kind of suck, like a lot of the stuff you're passionate about, and I don't really want you to be like running the schools.
You see, he's taking the opposite tack. When you talk about schools, everybody says like, oh, the schools are terrible, it's the bureaucracy, but our teachers are great, we love our teachers. But Chris is like, you know what,
well, the good ones probably don't get to do what they wanted. No, but they're all in the mix is what I'm saying. The higher ups are just former teachers that like got to higher BS positions. So now they, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Patrick Lamar says, Red Eye could be a YouTube show. I know. You know what? That's something that I don't want to get inside baseball with the Fox News thing, but that's something I should go to the digital division and talk about. That
could be like a Tough Crowd kind of a situation.
Yeah. And just do it. And then you can really,
you and Quinn should get together.
If it were just an internet show, then they'd really let us be silly. Pay attention. Fed Ed needs to go.
Fed Ed?
Homeschool for the win. Yeah. You know, well, I took my kids out of the schools, my wife and I, and we did homeschooling for a while.
Yeah.
Now they're both in Catholic high schools.
Okay.
But homeschooling definitely was a great thing for the middle school years.
Okay.
And then you don't have to deal with any of that stuff.
Like, the only, you're missing out on some social stuff or whatever, but like, there's things you can go out and do stuff.
That social argument. Whenever I talk homeschool, exactly. People say, what about the socialization?
They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You know,
plus
it'll happen.
The socialization in school is the worst. Like, everybody hates the socialization of school. They have the bullies, they have the friends, they have the, jealousy, whatever. Mm-hmm. The homeschool kids have the best socialization because they're the coolest kids. Yeah. They get together all the time. They all hang out with each other. They play Dungeons and Dragons.
Mm. And we know that's cool.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay.
I don't know what I would do. I'm working on meeting a female that ever would consider me father material before I can think about the schooling my children situation. But
yeah, you're going to someday. Everything's going to change. All of your views, they're all out the window.
Especially if I meet a teacher.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I might marry a teacher, and then I'll have to change my entire perspective.
Then they'll be the best. There was some video I saw online that I didn't watch, but it was like, Chris Freed, Ivy League guy, talks about homework or something like that. Are you the Ivy League guy? Are you an Ivy League guy?
Well, I did a master's at Harvard, so I wasn't really
almost coming back. I knew this, didn't I? Now I'm
probably at some point.
I didn't know you went to Harvard, but now it's coming back to me that one day we probably brought it up on the radio.
Yeah, probably.
Master's. Wait a minute. So you did.
I think because Harvard was in the news for something weird, like, you know, being biased or something.
And you were like, oh, I went to Harvard.
So I was like, yeah, there was a lot of Asians. That is true there. but also discriminated against, apparently.
Well, there, I think they, yeah, because they're, if it were like, if college,
if it were real, it'd be all like Indian and Asians, because all the dumb, like white kids here would never get in.
You know, I went to Emerson and, I love the play West Side Story, the musical, and MIT was doing West Side Story. So I went over to see it. And I was like, wow, I wonder how MIT, I didn't even know they had a theater department. I went over to see West Side Story and the, it was the Jets and the Sharks. And of course the Jets are the, you know, the New York kind of gang and the Sharks were all Asian. They just were like, there were so many Asians. They were like, let's just make it Asian.
They threw in. Yeah. It was just,
they were an Asian.
All the
gang.
Others. Yeah.
But they didn't reference it. They didn't say, oh, the Jets, the Sharks are Asian. It just, they were, because that's where.
Did they have, was it all the same though? Like they were like the references were very.
No, it was Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican.
Yeah. They were like, oh, you Puerto Ricans. But it wasn't Puerto Rican. It was a bunch of Asian guys.
I thought they tried to maybe update, throw in some ambiguous terms or.
I don't think you can. Okay. Like you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You'll get in trouble if you change the words.
Yeah. Or something that sounds not like, I don't know. If sometimes when I'm not sure someone's ethnicity, I end up saying something that sounds worse. Like I'm like, oh, you know, like one of those types or like, and it just sounds horrible because I know the region, but I don't know specific differences of like Spanish. I'll just stop talking.
No, that's gonna go. I get it. Patrick says he's got a cousin who is a teacher and she's a dum-dum.
See?
But I don't want this to be anti-teacher. I know my friend's a teacher. She's like a real teacher. She's an art teacher. Oh. Art teachers are good though, right?
Yeah. Because that's,
you're always the best.
That's just like a babysitter or a chaperone.
Yeah. They're not. That's
like. Like anyone, you know, art is art. So it's like
my friend who's an art teacher. Just tell them she doesn't want to be called a babysitter.
But you just support whatever anyone's view on art. You just say, yeah, no, follow that. Follow your dreams and
right.
I'm, you know, you in encourage high school, anything.
In high school, it starts to get real though.
Doesn't
you start? You got to kick it up a notch.
Yeah. My argument. So I did an art history class, and I hated Impressionism because just historically in the timeline, it's clearly people that wanted to be painters that weren't good at doing the stuff to make it look like a real person. They were like, oh, well, this is my impression
of
what
it's kind of gauzed.
So
it
got real blotchy and and then they're like, well, no, this is our whole movement here. No.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was probably with the Impressionists, there was probably like, there was like Renoir or something, right?
Yeah.
And he did a couple of awesome ones. And then the crappy artists were like, oh, wait, we can do the blotchy?
Yeah, they're like, we don't have to make it look real. Well, I'm joining this movement too. And then there's the other one where they can't even do the impressions well. And it's just like a bunch of random blocks. And so then it's whatever the hell that one is.
So this was, how did that go in your art history class?
The teacher didn't love my theory.
Love you, yeah.
But I did well. I was very good at like remembering who was who and whatever.
Yeah.
But I did fine, but I just enjoyed questioning some things.
Where was this? Cuz
this was DeSales University.
Okay, so you went to you're very schooled. So did you go to 8 years of school?
No. Well, yeah, I guess maybe.
Is master's 4 years or do it in two?
You can probably, I think mine was like, it was four when you take into the time of the thesis that I had to do. Mm-hmm. But the actual classes was about four semesters. But then with the thesis work and all that, because then I didn't have to be on campus anymore. So that's when I moved to LA and I finished the thesis. I kind of did that from a distance. Only there for 2 years.
What was the thesis thing?
I majored in psychology. And I was also in stand-up and writing at the time. So I combined them and I did a thesis on performance expectations or audience expectations on sense of humor. So when you're being introduced to the stage, are you better off? Like, does the audience care if you get like good credits or just like, oh, this next guy is a new comedian, you know? So it turned out people rated comedians higher in the first minute if they had national credits. After a minute, it evens out given the, you know, whatever.
Given your act, I guess, right?
But also, if you have higher credits or whatever, bigger credits for your introduction, you also score lower if you don't live up to the expectations.
Oh, yeah.
By the end of it, they hate you if they thought you were going to be better than you were.
Right. So how did you do? Did you go to audiences and hook them up to meters or something?
I did it through videos. It wasn't like as great as it could be with like a live show. But so I picked four comedians and it was with 50 people. I sent them four links and two of them had national credits and two of them had like shitty whatever credits.
Links. You sent them links. It's interesting because when you said links, I was like, there was no links in college, but I, not when I was in college.
Yeah.
But you had links.
Yes. Yeah, so I sent YouTube links on Facebook Messenger to a bunch of people that I did reach out at comedy clubs and got people's emails. It wasn't just like my friends.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then you switch them all up. So the same video would get, for half of them, they would get national credits, and the other half, they would get the shitty ones. So I mixed them all in and whatever, and that's what apparently it was significant, and the lady wanted to publish it. So I was published in the International Journal of Humor.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this lady you speak of.
She's a Harvard professor.
She's a Harvard professor.
Shelley Carson, Dr. Shelley Carson.
Now, I always hear people, when I was defending my thesis that time, you know, so that's something defending my thesis. Now, what does that mean? How do you do that? Do they put you in a courtroom and people question you?
For me, it was weird because they were telling me that it was significant. And I was saying, I don't care. I just want to graduate. I just want to end this thing. And they ask you questions and then you explain whatever. And as long as you don't sound like an idiot, they're like, okay, I guess that kind of.
Who's they? There's more than, so you got Shelley.
There was two other people I had to do a meeting with. I don't know who they were. There's whoever okays the thesis.
But it's all at once. It's not separate meetings.
There is one meeting of three of them. And then the other, you're just dealing with your advisor.
Uh-huh.
And the advisor was the one who then later on wanted me to publish it. And she was like, hey, so. I hope you don't mind. I have to do this to send. I was like, I don't care. Just whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Put your name on. I don't care. Just go ahead. Publish it.
Now, I'm not going to check your blasé work. What made you want to go get a master's? And then when you did get the master's, were you like, I'm just done with this.
I just wanted it on my resume. It started with, name drop.
Yeah.
Colin Jost, who I got to know at SNL. I was a writing intern.
We're going to go into that because I didn't know about this SNL thing until just before we were chatting and gabbing before the actual podcast. You mentioned SNL. So we're going to get into that. But Colin Jost.
He is a Harvard graduate, like a real one. Like he went right out of high school and was great and did the Lampoon and all that. So anyway, we were talking and I made a comment about how like at SNL, it'd be nice to have Harvard on my resume, or, you know, whatever. To try to do writing samples and stuff. And, you know, he kind of mentioned like, oh, you should just like take an online class. And as I looked it up and there was things where you can go online and whatever that led to. Then I passed a few things and then I chose psychology because I knew I could write papers about it pretty easy. So then it kind of kept going and I didn't have like a set great job at the time per se.
Yeah.
And I just went, you know what? I might as well go in person and get in the actual program and just finish this thing. And I was working from home for the WWE social media at the time. So I was from home. I could go move and whatever. So I just kind of kept going to get it on my resume. And
That's amazing.
And then, yeah, I didn't have anything else to do at the time.
Now, it's interesting the way you described it. Now, and tell me if this is just kind of you, you know, taking the piss out of yourself or being self-deprecating in some way. But you said Colin Jost was real. He was real. He went to Harvard right out of high school.
Because
I would think master's is harder. Like the higher you go, the harder it is or something.
Well, but you also, I mean, maybe I'm a genius. I don't know. But I've also learned that the work, it's pretty much, if you're willing to do the work, it's pretty easy. What's hard is that if it's undergrad, you know, maybe you want to go out partying, you don't really care about the work or whatever, or they give you more reading material. If you don't want to read it, then that's going to suck or, but it's not hard or it's not like extra difficult. It's just a matter of like, just get it done and you'll be fine.
But getting in, like, so, he must have had very high grades.
Yeah. See, that's why I said out of high school for him, that's like when it's very, very competitive.
Yeah.
I kind of weaseled my way in through these online courses. And I think what happens is a lot of people just take the online courses to say they're doing it.
Yeah.
And they don't really continue it. Whereas I did a bunch and then I got like officially in the program. And then I moved to the campus and all this. So I had to like pass a writing sample. Then I had to pass statistics 2, which I never even took statistics 1. I didn't know any like the language of all that. So I just spent a weekend like learning it and then just went to statistics 2. And I think I just did stuff that other people probably had a more of a life going on. So they didn't have the time to do it.
Yeah.
So I just kept going.
It's like, remember, like Leonardo DiCaprio, he just passed the bar and became a lawyer.
Yeah. And Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah. And he was like, how did you pass the bar? And he was like, he actually did.
I just did. I just learned it. And then.
So
I would love to do that. That would be great.
To be an imposter.
An imposter pilot specifically would be really fun.
But he never flew the plane, but he.
Yeah. You just chill in the back.
Yeah.
What's that called?
You're like the
ride along one.
Yeah. I don't know. Someone tell us in the comments.
Yeah. But my luck would be like
jump seat.
Someone, the pilots would have like a heart attack and then it's up to me to.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, I've been lying. I'm sorry. Like, yeah. I'll take the parachute.
So let's get to SNL, right? You interned there, which is not the Page program.
No.
It's intern program. I didn't know those were two different things, but you interned and you were kind of like a comedy writer, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, aspiring. You didn't have to be a writer's intern.
Is that right?
I was, yes.
Okay.
You didn't have to be a writer or a comedian to do the writing internship. But once you're there, I was talking to people and I found out that some of the interns get to submit jokes for Weekend Update.
Yeah.
So I got that email and was doing that. And then in the years afterward, I kept in touch and, you know, every other year or so they were like taking freelance submissions. So I got to do that for like, you know, maybe up until 2015 or 16.
And was it Colin Jost was the host?
Yeah.
Or the weekend?
Yeah, he was just a writer when I was interning. Then when I left, he became head writer and then eventually on the show.
Who was doing Weekend Update when you were submitting jokes?
Seth and Amy Poehler.
Okay, Seth and Amy Poehler, Seth the Myers, and you would submit jokes. And what kind of jokes did they like? I remember like Brian Tucker.
Not funny ones.
Well, you know Brian? Brian Tucker was
yeah,
on it?
Yeah.
Okay, so Brian and I kind of moved to the city around the same time. And he was doing the submissions. Mm. You know, he went the writing route from the beginning. I was like a performer. He was a writer. And Brian would, submit jokes. And he, he couldn't get on Letterman. And he was like, oh, I got a joke here. And I got like, you know, I got one on Leno or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's like, he really wanted to get on Letterman. And then he realized that Letterman likes bad jokes. Like he was writing clever jokes. And Letterman kind of likes bad ones. So that he can do them and then be like, oh, Clinton likes hamburgers,
laugh about it.
You know, and then, yeah. And then kind of turn and be like, do you get that? He likes hamburgers. Like he liked to make fun of the bad jokes.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a normish, it was before Norm, but I'm saying,
right. You know. So then he started writing bad jokes and Letterman started buying them. And he's like, I'm selling jokes like crazy to Letterman.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I think I just wrote bad joke. No. no, but they're, you know, I'm not saying I had great whatever that should have been used, because it's also, there's a hierarchy there. You know that the staff is going to have 95%.
Yeah, it's got to be really good. If an intern submits,
every
it, it's
now
super.
In a long time, they take an intern one or whatever. But yeah, there was lots of times where like the interns and I would discuss jokes, and you know, we find like a few that we're like, they have to pick that. That's like perfect for the story or the whatever. And then you see that they go through the dress rehearsal, and there's so many where you're just like, really? Like, you couldn't slip that one in?
Right.
But, you know, it not for me to decide. And
yeah, you never know.
So
sometimes they like, you know, they have a rhythm they want to get into. And I think,
yeah, exactly.
Obviously, they do some hacky jokes on SNL as well. And I think a lot of people like doing that. Like, they have an edgy joke.
Yeah.
And then they have a standard joke, you know. Mm-hmm. And then if there's like, if they do a really edgy joke that kind of gets a gasp or whatever, they're not going to do any more for the whole thing. Like, they want one edgy one and then go back to the, you know, the standard.
True. Or sometimes what would happen is, which is understandable, but also sometimes you question that you'll see a very, very, very similar joke that gets on.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I'm pretty sure that they probably just saw mine. And then like, they were like, this could be better. And then they just don't tell you it was yours, but also it's someone else could have thought of it. And that's perfectly fine. So,
and I think people, you know, they do that.
Yeah.
SNL will be, you can see the side by side videos like, okay, here's my bit that I did, you know, and it's like a stand up bit. And then you see that bit exactly in an SNL sketch. And it's not as if Lorne Michaels was like, let's steal his bit.
Yeah.
It's just some writer who's like, I got to get on the air. And they're like, I'm going to, you know, they kind of, there's so many writers, and you know, some of them do steal, but they don't. Mm-hmm. They don't tell anybody, and it's hard to.
Yes. I mean, in stand up, you see people do a bit, and in your head, you're like, oh, that could be a sketch or something. So then you didn't really steal the joke, but you're like, I did think of a sketch from the premise, though.
Yeah.
So now it's weird, but.
Yeah. But I think that it's hard to, for, you know, they'll. By the time that side by side video on YouTube comes out, and they're like, oh, that, okay, they definitely stole that guy's bit. Like, the writer's like, you know, he's moved on to, or whatever. It's probably, do you think these things get so assembled? A lot of times they're like, they don't even know who wrote the joke.
Oh, that's true too. Yeah. Cause I mean, unless you're the head writer and you're like, keeping track, and you definitely know.
And then they know.
But, like, I don't think anyone, if I went up to anyone and was like, hey, did you read the joke about this that I did? They would have no clue. They'd be like, maybe we saw it. I don't know. We probably had a similar one. We didn't want to do it. Whatever. Yeah. Like, I don't think they're being like, oh, that's an intern. Screw them.
Uh-huh.
I think it's just like, they know there's a select few that definitely get the high percentage.
Look at all these comments. Picks. I can't even read all these comments. There's so many.
I could tell you an example of one that I wrote. There was a story in somewhere in England. A hairdresser got in trouble for using bull sperm in products. And then my joke was something about like the most common bull found was Dennis Rodman or something like that. Like, his jizz was in the.
And so you did that joke.
It was one of my submissions, but then I feel like it got changed to bull from Night Court. But it was the same thing. It was then we found out it was the sperm was from bull from Night Court instead of Dennis Rodman, which I do think is a better pick, because Rodman wasn't always a bull, number one, and he's, you know.
Right.
But anyway. He's a funnier character, I think.
Yeah, I don't even know. Like, I wouldn't even know who Bull from Night Court was. Is that big bald guy?
Yeah.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah,
makes sense.
so that was one where I thought to myself, I like to think mine got selected, but then they like tweaked it. But it's also a very easy joke to think of. So
yeah,
whatever. But
I would like to talk about the Shane Gillis thing, right? So he was on, he was unhired by SNL. Then he comes back to host it because he's so big. He's such a big stand-up now, huge on like number one guy on Netflix, all that kind of thing. So they have him back. Probably Lorne Michaels never wanted to fire him. NBC was probably like, you got to fire this guy. Lorne Michaels is like, oh, I got to fire him. So they fired him.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and he hosts the show. And it's funny because the, I don't know if you are aware of, I really wanted to see, so he did the show. I didn't watch him, but I, of course I watched it, you know, the next day. And then I went online and all these people are writing about it, you know, Vanity Fair, New York Times, whatever. Shane Gillis bombs in opening.
Yeah.
Like they literally said he bombed.
And it's like, what the hell are you listening to? Like,
They were going to write bomb no matter what happened.
Yeah.
Because they don't like the guy or they don't like that, you know.
Like, his presentation, demeanor, and whatever, his sometimes can look like nervous or whatever, but that's part of his delivery. That's how he goes.
And he was getting laughs. Like, you watch that thing. Everybody's laughing. You know, whatever. It was a very successful.
Even they had the, did you see any of the girl that was behind him, the band member?
No.
There's a girl, a guitarist or bassist or something in the band, and people zoom in on her reactions to throughout the thing. And some people are like, woke, young, liberal girl doesn't laugh at all at Shane.
Yeah.
And then the other ones are like, you know, cute girl can't help but smirk at what she knows is funny. Like, just because when I was watching it, you can see her kind of chuckling, and like, I thought she was having a good time. And then other people are saying that she's this like refuses to laugh at, and I'm like,
funny.
I think everyone looks like they're fine.
Yeah,
it sounds fine. Everyone's having a good time.
But I've noticed it's different. So I went on today and I searched Shane Gillis, and it looks like they've changed their headlines. Like you can't see that bombing headline anymore.
Good.
Like, I think it was either Vanity Fair or one of the those stupid, you know, publications, like New York Magazine, Vanity Fair, they're all kind of the same, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, they wrote the article before it even happened.
Yeah.
To get it out. And then they were like, oh, he looks uncomfortable. Okay. He bombed.
Yeah.
Let's post it. And then it's like, okay, the internet's going to run its course. There's going to be haters. And then the comedy community are going to be like, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, great.
But it is funny though.
But I do. I give it up to Lorne for sticking with him and then booking him. So
did you work with him when you were an intern? Did you see him much?
Who, Lorne?
Yeah.
I would occasionally see him. I never like really interacted. Like there's always just like awkward Lorne stories of like the one time I was going there in like the main elevators, there's a whole bunch of them. So you wait to see which letter yours is.
Yeah.
And I got mine. I looked over and Lorne was like just getting in the elevator. So I started to walk over. I was like, whatever. I'm just going to go, you know, I'm sure it's fine. And as I'm approaching, we meet eyes and he just watches the doors close slowly. And I was like, all right, I'll get the next
one. It is like a sketch, right?
Yeah. And then another time we like passed in a doorway. And, you know, I was like in a hurry delivering something, but I had to just be like, hello. Like,
You don't want to monopolize his time, but you don't want to ignore him either.
He just doesn't, he's not mean. He just doesn't look like he ever gives a shit about anyone unless you're, you know, worth talking to.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But
I've seen him at Jimmy Fallon because he's the producer of that show as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the, actually, one time he was talking to someone and I didn't see that it was Lorne, and I was in my ragtime gals outfit.
Wow, nice.
And so we were kind of busy and I'm in the uniform with the straw hat and everything. And it's just Lorne was standing in front of the door to the studio and he was kind of talking to someone. But there was enough space between the two of them that I thought, well, I'll just go between those two guys, you know, those two dudes who are talking. I have to get into the studio because they wanted me in there for some reason. So I just kind of plowed through them. And then once I was between the two of them, I was like, oh, they're closer than I thought. Like they're two guys talking. And I just like hammered in between them.
Yeah.
And then I turned and looked back and it was Lorne Michaels talking to some.
Anything weird happen? Was he like,
he must have been like, why did that ragtime gal just plow through? Like, I'm Lorne Michaels.
Ragtime
gal. But but I didn't have time to, because I had to get to like rehearsal or like taping practice or something.
I
just let it go. And I was just like, and then I saw him again and he didn't upbraid me for my behavior. So I thought I'm okay.
That's why I think so many people, when you're an intern, especially there was a lot of like, don't do this and don't try to talk to, because there's probably some interns that get yelled at because they go up to the celebrity guest and do something crazy, or so they just like make you feel like it's scary.
Right.
But for the most part, it's like, just do your job and like no one's going to yell at you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I never felt comfortable to, I would never just be like, oh, hey, Lauren, by the way, I'd love to write here someday. Like he would be like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Just get out of my face.
But at the same time, you didn't miss an opportunity to network with Colin Jost or people, you know.
Well, like after parties and stuff are nice to just go have a beverage and whatever. But oh, I was going to say, I had a plowing story once where I forget who the host was, but it was a show where there were a lot of celebrity guests that wanted to be there.
Yeah.
So, it was like after the show and I had to go deliver a paper somewhere and I go through the right, you know, on the show when they go to the host dressing room, and the camera follows them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like right through that main little hallway there. And as I'm approaching this like normally crowded area, I realized that there was like no one around except for like a small gathering right around that hallway. And I'm just like walking through and I'm like, I got to get through. And I'm like, excuse me. And then
what are you you holding something?
I was holding whatever I'm delivering, some papers that I had to give to the page desk. And as I'm in the middle of the circle, I like kind of realize like everyone is scattered around looking our way. And now the circle is me in the middle, surrounded by Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Paul McCartney. And I'm like, I'm gonna like step on someone's feet or like, but like they don't care. They're the nicest people ever. But I was just waiting for someone to be, get the fuck out of here. What are you doing there? You can't, you know, whatever. Cause you just think you're going to get yelled at all the time. But then it's like Steve and Martin like, there you go.
It's small. Like it's too small for it to be a TV. Like, you know, cause they're in that NBC building, which was built like, you know, so many years ago. And it's not like a Hollywood studio. Like everybody's standing around in doorways and hallways.
Yeah. And there is that weird vibe of like celebrity, whatever. Like if everyone starts looking, getting weird, it's like, just walk around. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And then I told Paul McCartney that the Stones are better and and walked off. And I said, you one hit wonder, get out of my way. But
the Jimmy Fallon is on six, like 6B is his studio. Mm-hmm. Where's SNL? I don't know if I've ever been there.
8H. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a couple of floors. I've never been there. I've never been to, I never seen a taping. I've never, but you know, it's sometimes they come down and you see SNL people running around.
Yeah. The, what's the other? Well, then there's 9 because the SNL has like the overlooking floor as well. And that's like the writer's room.
Uh-huh.
Then the offices are all the way on 17. So it's a weird, and you have to go through two different elevator banks to get there. It's really?
But that's not walking. That's SNL. Jimmy, everything is on 6.
Yeah.
And when I was first there, it was Conan, because Conan was there.
He was he was 6A or B or one of them. He was across the hall.
He was across the hall. That's right.
That was my first internship.
Was Conan O'Brien?
Yeah, late night with Conan.
Oh wow!
Back in 05 to 06 or 07 or something.
And you were also a writer's intern?
Just production intern.
Okay, production intern.
Mostly with the writers, but
that's good. And I think that's hard to get that job. Like everybody wants to, like the page things. Those are very exclusive.
Well, the page, that's like when you're out of college. That's like an actual job that you get paid. Well, I think they pay interns now, but. That's like where you have to wear the suit and everything. And
right.
But
you were a college intern.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The Conan thing I think I got because I ended up knowing one of the band members that put in a good word, Mark Pender. bald trumpet player on the show, and La Bamba with the mustache and the trombone, because I knew them from the Jersey Shore. I was Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes fan, because I like Springsteen and all that.
Yeah.
And then I had already
submitted. And those guys were with that?
They were Conan's band for like very long. And I had already submitted my stuff, and like I talked to the intern coordinator, but it's like, you know, you don't know. So then I met them at one show somewhere, and I just mentioned like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm like trying to be an intern on the, and you know, he knew my name, but he was just like, oh, cool, cool, whatever. And then like next week or something, I called and tried to follow up on the application. And she was like, oh yeah, Mark put in and came over and said blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wow.
That's great.
It was very surprising.
So those band, okay. Max
Weinberg.
Max Weinberg was Springsteen's drummer.
Yeah.
But who were the Asbury Jukes?
That was just, they sort of started with him in Asbury Park, Springsteen.
Oh.
They just like all were around in the 70s together.
Okay.
So so Pender and La Bamba also played with Bruce on the Tunnel of Love tour in the late 80s.
Uh-huh.
But they all knew each other from the Jersey Shore scene, like Steven Van Zandt and all them. So yeah, they just kind of, I got to know Southside's music because of the Springsteen genre.
Right.
So, and obviously it's cheaper and easier to go to a show than Bruce all the time. So we would just go to the shore and the Stone Pony in Asbury Park. Right. And it was a real fun time. And we just happened, I was like, holy shit, that's the Conan band.
Yeah.
So,
and it was not the whole Conan band or a lot of them.
It was just some of them. And then, they would do little drop-ins and stuff now and then of the Vivinos. And
I saw the Fab Foe, which is a couple of the guys from the Conan band and a couple of the guys from Letterman's band, like Will Lee is in them. Have you heard of the Fab Foe?
I think they played at the Easton State Theater. I didn't see them, but I see that advertised in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I mean, Will Lee, and I think Jimmy Vivino was in the Fab Foe, I think. Mm. There's a couple of guys. I mean, some people are going to get, but great. I mean, a great Beatles cover band. They do like when I saw them, they did Abbey Road. They did the whole album. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, it
did they
was
just
crazy.
Pick an album to do
sometimes
each show or like, oh, okay.
Well, yeah, sometimes they'll do an album. Sometimes they'll do, a kind of greatest. It's like they do the one that I saw, it was a bunch of Beatles covers, and then it was the B-side of Abbey Road. They did the whole thing. And the vocals are super strong. Like, they do all the vocals. Every one of them can sing. Mm. And who's it was the Letterman drummer and Bill Lee, Will Lee. I forget the Letterman drummer guy, but
I know, me too. I was trying to think.
And then some of the other Conan guys are there, playing
they're just so fun. Section, like, so. Just cause I like that music. So even though I'm not like anywhere good enough to be like, hey, I'll play, like they would let me come up and sing songs and stuff when they do shows in New York. But I enjoy that like Springsteen-ish, whatever genre so much. So it's been so fun to go to like random shows and they all just guest on each other's thing. And Steven Van Zandt shows up, or Clarence back in the day before he was passed on. But so it was like, do you know Bobby Bandiera, that name?
I know that name.
Because he was a Jersey guy, but then he played with Bon Jovi a lot.
Yeah.
Like not Richie Sambora, but a fill-in. And I would, I got to sing with him.
Jeepers. So you went into stand-up. Did you ever want to go and be a musician?
I was in a cover band. Like, I'm not good enough of a musician to just do that. Like, I do it with little parody songs and things. I'll do like in piano impression, but it's just like very minimal. I wouldn't feel confident like doing a solo and feeling like I'm really, really great.
But you can sing, you can play the piano.
I can karaoke well.
Karaoke
I wouldn't
well.
Say I'm like American Idol, but I
and piano.
I can screw around and have fun.
Guitar?
Little guitar.
And a little piano. So
a little
harmonica. Oh, okay. So you're the whole thing. So you were in a cover band. So when you were 18, were you like, I'm going to be in a rock band? Because I was like, when I was in junior high and high school, I wanted to go be in like a new wave band in Boston. Like, that was my idea.
That's I could see that, though.
You know, 80s. It was the 80s.
Well, I wasn't a songwriter, so I'm not good at like lyrics or, so I knew that I wasn't going to be like writing original songs. I wrote a couple like comedic songs to be silly, but yeah, I knew that I wasn't going to like write an album and have people like enjoy my music. So I was like, well, what am I? It's covers are fun, but you're not going to get anywhere. So that's why more stand-up was my thing.
When did
thing.
You start stand-up?
But I've always wanted to incorporate music like Dana Carvey did or Sandler, you know.
Yeah.
So I enjoy those kind of things. But
first time you did stand-up, when?
Probably age 24.
24?
Yeah.
Okay, that's late.
I waited a little because I was doing I did the internships and all that. Right. Cause I figured I'd get in through writing. And then eventually I was like, you know, I guess you got to just get out there and start, you know.
I mean, Woody Allen wanted to be a writer. It's all he ever wanted to do was write, be a writer, and then later a director, of course. But his manager was like, you have to do stand-up. And he was like, I can't. I'm a nervous person. He's like, you've got to do stand-up. And that, you know, that was his
ticket. It's intimidating and hard to think about and then do. So I always just had it in my head that, like, I was going to get involved somehow, kind of like a Chevy Chase, like, you're involved, but you're not a stand-up, but you're a good writer, and then you just get on something. Or I just thought that would happen, and then it didn't. So I'd put more effort into stand-up stuff.
Yeah, it's just a matter of because then you have your own thing. Like it's there's no better way to be your own product than doing stand-up, right?
And it does feel good, like after years of doing it. You look back and you think it's crazy to think how intimidating it seems. Because right now it's like I'll go stand on a stage for 20 minutes with no preparation and you can get through it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Before it's like, oh my God, what am I going to say? Everything has to be hilarious. And now it's like you figure it out. Crowd work.
Yep.
Get through it.
Just get up there. I'm looking at some of the comments here. Gillis is more popular than SNL at the moment. Yes, he is. He's bigger. He's bigger than the whole
I would say
game.
Way bigger than the...
Yeah. Tom, big fan. All right. That's good. He's a big fan.
Of you, though.
I know, but I'll need more of your humor on Gutfeld. Okay, excellent. I miss the ragtime gal, says Patrick. Southside Johnny. Oh, what does that mean?
That's
just someone
Jersey
saying
band.
Southside Johnny?
He's just... maybe a fan of South. Maybe it is Southside Johnny.
But I wasn't asking for the name. Mary just was saying Southside Johnny. But Patrick says Anton Figg. That's the drummer for Letterman. Anton Figg. And I'm pretty sure Anton Figg does play with the Fab Foe. But if you ever get a chance to see those guys, Fab Foe, so good, so entertaining. Mm. We're at about 50 minutes. I've never done an hour podcast because I just don't think.
Oh,
I mean,
we're doing it.
You think we're gonna do an hour?
We're going to release this as a special too. Is what we're going to do. It's going to be our hour special.
Let's plug whatever you're doing now. What do people do? I mean,
well,
I don't have I have your name on the screen.
Yeah, that's fine.
What do you
if
have?
If you put an at in front of that and then on Instagram, that's
at
fine.
Chris Fried. But
I got albums on Spotify. If anyone wants to look them up,
you can look up and then they'll play your material. Mm-hmm. What about though? You don't podcast because you can't figure out the technology.
I am bad at it currently. I don't have a podcast, but I did. So I did a Patreon for a while because we filmed three episodes of it was a pilot and then two other cheaper episodes of a sitcom. That was called Collecting.
Collecting. I remember that.
And it was on Patreon and it will be out again soon, but not right now. So look for Collecting in the future. It's about a guy milking the unemployment system. We're probably just going to do a YouTube thing for that and just get it out there. But I don't know. We'll see.
If somebody wants to see a little bit of that, where is it? Is it on YouTube?
You can YouTube Collecting. Chris Fried, probably.
Yeah.
And then
I bet you could do.
But there's some trailers up there. And also my Instagram has clips. So,
yeah.
But I'll be releasing more of that soon. I'm getting social media happy in the very near future.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I kind of just do it. I would probably have to get serious about this kind of nonsense if I wasn't employed. Like, you know, I got the Fox gig, so I'm always doing that.
That's why I don't have an excuse.
Yeah.
I have all the time in the world and no family.
And I don't worry about it, though, because, look, this is what I like doing it. I like experimenting with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at this, you know, this Mevo camera that follows us. So I like playing with this stuff. But I'm glad that I don't have to worry about, counts of people and then getting the advertising.
See, that's the problem is that I'm going to release the episodes on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then it'll be like 30 views in like a day. And then I'll be really upset. And then by the week, it'll be like 100. And I'll be like, oh, Jesus. Yeah. So it's one of those where you don't want to like look embarrassed right away.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of the gate.
Well, YouTube, but nobody watches.
It's going to happen.
This is on YouTube, and I can't get people to watch YouTube or Rumble, but I do it anyway.
I've never even heard of Rumble.
Rumble is, some people go crazy on Rumble with the views, you know, because it's.
The trick is to be on TikTok and also have boobs. I think. I might invest in that.
I don't do TikTok.
Because then
I
have all you're giving away your soul and your informations.
It used to be, though, that I would post things like the Joe Biden videos I do for Gutfeld. Mm-hmm. I would post them on Instagram and it would get, 25,000, 30,000 views. Mm-hmm. And then they started revenue sharing. Like Instagram was giving me your views get a lot of views revenue. And they just started sending me money to my PayPal account.
Wow.
And it wasn't much. It was like, it was like $50 a video or something, but I was like, I'll take that.
Yeah.
And cause they're not even like, I don't even think I was allowed to do it. Like it wasn't like my, but it's all like I shoot them at home. So it's not even like it's not shot on Fox's equipment.
Yeah,
or whatever.
That's true.
So I would shoot them at home. And sometimes I would put up a different take than I did on the show. So it's essentially my videos, but then they cut that off and they stopped. They said, we're not sharing revenue anymore. And then the view counts went down.
Was there an explanation of?
No, they just were like, we don't do that anymore. And because they were like, it was experimental or whatever. And then now I post them and they get like 10,000 views, not like 30 or 40,000. And I actually get more views on X now. Like X was Twitter.
Okay.
And I would get nothing on I would post like this video. We'll see how many people watched it on X. But essentially, now it's everything's flipped, and X now has more views than Instagram. Yeah. I don't know why. I don't really
got to get back on it. Well, because it's coming. That's Elon took over, and now the things are all regrouping. Yeah. And
so the right wingers are like
your message is getting through.
Yeah, we have a better
not being blocked
algorithm or something. So the
I was going to say the podcast that I'm considering, or even just a clips for just something of once I get things going. It's Ignorance is Chris was my podcast that I tried a few times. So I'm going to try to bring it back. And
is it still on there on like Apple Podcasts?
No, it's off of, it was a Patreon because I tried to release it with collecting to have like content for the Patreon.
I see.
That's not just in a full episode of the thing.
Yeah.
So I thought I would do a weekly podcast so people can tune into that and then wait for the next full episode, whatever. But point is, when I do the podcast, it will be called Ignorance is Chris again.
I like
on
it.
On some format.
I had a podcast for a long time and then I just stopped doing it because I got busy or whatever. And then,
because I'm just making too much money.
Well,
elsewhere.
No, I mean, it was just, but then when I started podcasting again, I said, look, if I'm going to do it, it's going to be unserious and it's not going to be very professional, as you can see from our setup here. But I said, I'm going to do it once a week. So I'm doing them now once a week.
Nice.
And we're getting out and now people are subscribing. It's on Spotify. It's on. But what I did was I just went back to the old podcast and I put them in.
Oh,
so
okay.
If you subscribe to my podcast, any of the things, Apple or Spotify or whatever, you can go back in time and then you can hear the other unimpressive podcasts that were on
before.
What
about clips from the radio show? Are you allowed to ever post or do anything from Fox Radio?
I don't have that.
You don't have the footage saved or
no,
anything?
No, because they just kind of did their thing. And
see, whenever I was on, I had clips of it that I would post on social media and stuff. But I don't know what the legalities are. If like if I had a TikTok or something that you put out a clip, you know,
I think you can do it.
Like, are they going to flag that and be like, hey, this was our studio. You can't show.
No, because everybody does it. Like, you know, people who are on Fox, they're always posting about it on social media. And I think that's just part of a fair use thing. If you Patreoned it, if you were like, you know, you got to pay to see my Fox News clip, they'd probably be like, I don't think you can do that.
Okay.
You know, but everybody does everything now.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's all up for, I mean, now they have music. Like you don't, like Instagram, I'll put the reel on. And they're like, do you want music? And I'm like, yeah. So I'll put the talking heads on there behind my my Joe Biden thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all figured out by Instagram. Like Instagram got the rights to the music. It used to be if you put the talking heads on your video, YouTube would say like, this is banned, you know?
I always find it's weird that TV shows can just show clips of other TV shows.
Yeah.
Like you would think that sometimes you can't even wear a certain logo on your shirt. Like if you had a big Nike thing on in a movie and they're like, hey, we don't want that in there. But you can be on Fox News and show a clip of MSNBC and be like, look at these jerks over here.
I know.
So why are you allowed to show their camera footage?
Yeah,
you
know? That's like a fair use thing.
I don't know what's going on with that.
And they don't really have to blur out the logos. That's just people like all of Viacom, they would blur the logo. So anytime you had a logo on Comedy Central or Nickelodeon or you know, MTV,
like Disney would hate that.
They would blur the logo because they were, I don't know why they were like, nobody's like Nike's not going to come after them for having their logo on there. It's just, I think they were like being extra careful. Mm-hmm. In case a competing logo, like if they sold like the real world, if they sold it to international TV and then the sponsor happened to be like not Nike, a different thing, then that company could be like, hey, you can't sell us this in syndication. Our, you know, Adidas is our sponsor. So just to cover their bases, they would cover all logos.
That's true.
Even the ones that they had a good relationship with. You know what I mean? We did it. Mm. We got to an hour. We've been wasting the last 8 minutes just so I could have an hour long podcast.
We've been looking at all that from just the Southside Johnny suggestion. See, we can do improv.
Yeah. All right. Chris Fried, you spell it like fried. Thank you for doing the Tom Shalhoub podcast.
And well, thank you for having me.
And we'll see you later. And the thing is, I'm going to podcast. This is live.
Yeah.
So it's not really a podcast. Now, this is a live video, but then I'm going to download this and then put it on the podcasting platform.
It's a live stream and podcast, eventual podcast.
Yeah, it'll get there. Okay. End stream.
That's how every.